Mics are live.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is an informal hearing on case number PU-16-48. And are we taking these together, Commissioner Crispin?
Yes.
Okay. And case number PU-17-50. It is 1:33 p.m. on Thursday, November 7th, 2019. I'm Commissioner Brian Crotius, joined by Commissioner Julie Fedorchuk and Commissioner Randy Crisman. I don't have any opening comments. Commissioner Fedorchuk?
No opening comments for me.
Commissioner Crisman?
So I'll just kick this off and then turn it over to the company, too.
Well, I'll make one statement first. I know. We've got to figure that out from a logistics standpoint.
I forgot. There's too many other distractions.
This is an informal hearing involving only undisputed facts. If there are any disputed facts, we will close the informal hearing and issue a notice of hearing. The applicant goes first in this type of proceeding, but before starting, I will have staff introduce himself, and then followed by company representatives, please.
Victor Shook with staff.
Andy Livingston with Midco. Emily Arnoldy with Midco.
Okay. Now I'm going to turn it over to the portfolio holder, Commissioner Randy Crisman, and we'll take it from there.
First of all, Emily, could you spell your last name?
Sure. It's
Arnoldy.
Okay, thank you. Yes. So I think that the start of all this goes back to quite a few years ago, and basically, for lack of a better term, but the common term that was used in many cases were the Obama phones, and things that we've seen reported around the country where there was really no oversight of a program, and we're hearing, you know, pretty well documented cases of people taking advantage of that program, peddling those phones to most anybody that they could get to take one, or making up people to take one, and doing okay on just collecting the subsidy that was available. And we didn't want that to happen here, and we kind of created our own oversight program, whereby I don't mean to say that that was the whole basis of the lifeline, but that was the new development that had kind of been invented. And so we set up a plan whereby the lifeline cellular providers would submit the list of names to our human services department of the people who were getting these phones, so that, because human services couldn't share the information of who was qualified to receive them and who wasn't with us, but supposedly they could inform us if someone was putting those out to people who weren't qualified. And I really felt good about that. We had at least, you know, maybe it wasn't a perfect catch-all, but we had done something to at least lessen, but maybe eliminate, the waste, fraud, and abuse that was being reported all over the country. That went on for a couple years. I think right now USAC, the federal organization, has something new out that is, it's new, but it's potentially workable to eliminate the waste, fraud, and abuse from the program. And I also believe that with the technology upgrades, our process of working through human services might not really work anymore anyway, because their new technology doesn't allow them to do what they used to do. So that's my background on it. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll turn it over to the company to, I think that gets to the point of what they're trying to accomplish here.
Okay, very good.
Sure. Thank you, actually, for allowing us to be here today. We kind of wanted to go through a little bit of the progression of Lifeline and how we got to where we are today. And in our diagram, as we were speaking, in the beginning, all of the subscribers would actually send applications to MDCO and any supporting eligibility documentation that would actually prove that they could be a benefit of the program. 2013, USAC actually rolled out a program where they would do the annual recertifications, and we actually gave you a handout, and we'll talk about it as we progress through this, the differences between what a recertification and a re-verification is, and they are very different. The recertification is actually an annual certification process that every subscriber has to go to basically let us know that they are still eligible. And the re-verification we'll talk about when we get into some of the national verifier information in a little bit here. So in 2013, MDCO actually elected to have USAC do those annual recertifications for us. So USAC actually sends notification out to the customers that that they have to recertify that they still meet the eligibility requirements. So that's they're still part of like Medicaid or SNAP, that their income is still under that poverty level. Then in 2014, we USAC brought NLAD into the picture, and that provides a database that we as a provider could actually access to make sure that there were no duplicate subscribers. So if that name was already in the database and we looked at it, we would not be able to claim that customer as a MDCO Lifeline customer. They were already assigned to somebody else. Or if it happened to be a household that is already receiving the Lifeline benefit, or if it was a deceased individual. So that helped us kind of eliminate some of the potential fraud of getting an additional benefit. 2016, they rolled out the modernization order, and that started to streamline some of the eligibility. They introduced broadband into the program as well. Prior to that, it was you could only receive the benefit on phone only, so they were moving more toward that broadband segment. And there were rolling certifications that we had at that time. So it was a monthly recertification with that. In 2017, the National Verifier, that was the very first soft launch that USAC did for the National Verifier. North Dakota and South Dakota were actually chosen as a soft launch in October of 2018. And this is where the eligibility portion of Lifeline is now part of the USAC responsibility. So instead of MDCO receiving the applications and the eligibility documentation, all of that is now moved to USAC themselves. And now we are at the hard launch, which is now in 2019. So that means that all of the subscribers that want to have Lifeline have to log in to the USAC Lifeline portal and create a profile and do all of that through USAC directly. Mm-hmm. At that time, when the National Verifier was launching, we were working closely with USAC, and we actually had to provide all of our file information that we had with customers that had applied for Lifeline within 6 months of when that verifier was going to launch. And so we had to copy everything. So it was like eligibility documentation. So if they were part of SNAP or Medicaid, as well as their application, we had to provide that to USAC. They then in turn are using that for re-verification. And that's where we talk about the re-verification is part of the national verifier. And what happens is that it's a one-time process that USAC goes through, and they will make sure that everybody and all the documentation that we already sent to USAC for current Lifeline customers, that they still are valid receivers of that benefit before they actually put them into the database. So it was an extra step that they took prior to just dumping everybody into the national verifier. They do the initial re-verification. They butt that information up against federal housing and the Medicaid database. Anybody that falls out of that, that they cannot re-verify, there is a notification that is sent out to that customer that they have a set amount of time to send in their documentation and make sure that they are eligible for the program. If they're not, then we receive a notification that says that they're no longer eligible and you need to remove them from your database. All right.
Can I turn back on something you said?
Yeah.
That I maybe misunderstood. I think you said that the customers need to go through USAC to show qualifications. And I thought that if you qualified for some of these programs within the state, that our human services were sending out a letter to them indicating they qualified. And so, like, if they didn't have internet access or something, they could take that letter to the Lifeline provider and use that as their evidence. Am I misunderstanding that?
Nope, that is correct. That is correct. So that was how the old system was, the old Lifeline, and we did receive that information. So we would get, you know, a printout of SNAP benefits or the Medicaid from the state, and that would be part of that eligibility proof.
But they are each getting a letter that they can take to someone, right?
You know, I'm not sure on the state level. I can't speak for that.
I think that the letter you may be referring to it basically states that they may be eligible. And so the customer would bring that letter to, like, our customer service center, mm-hmm. or they would mail that in to our group to, you know, vet out their application. But they would still have to apply. It wasn't an automatic in. It wasn't, you know, the customer still had to take those steps to fill out the application and provide the proof documentation. Mm-hmm. The letter was just a, you know, hey, we know that you're right in this program. This Lifeline program also, you know, utilizes that as a, you know, qualifier. So, but they would still have to apply.
Okay. This is Victor with staff, just to kind of clarify that. So our Department of Human Services is mailing out letters to customers of SNAP and Medicaid, I know for certain, that it's a letter saying you're eligible for either for one of those two programs. Not all of them, but most of them are now converted where there's a note on that letter saying this can be used as your proof of eligibility for Lifeline, just to kind of give them a heads up that you can use this to get some another benefit. It doesn't, like they were saying, it doesn't automatically enroll them mm-hmm. in the Lifeline program. It just,
right.
That's their eligibility document, okay. essentially.
Yeah.
And I think, and kind of what's changing here with the new national verifier, in the past, the customers would just deal directly with MIDCO, and they mm-hmm. still can to a certain extent, but MIDCO was kind of holding all of the verification information.
Yes.
And simply saying when they go to the federal government to receive their, I'm not sure what it's called, the Universal Service Fund dollars for the mm-hmm. National Verifier, essentially.
Right. Yep.
these are my customers. I have, 300 customers that are eligible, so I need a check equivalent for that. Where now customers are verifying directly with the national verifier,
yes,
federal level, and then the federal level is saying, okay, Midco, I show you as having 300 eligible customers. Here is your check.
Correct.
So it's kind of switching that responsibility from the companies being upfront and not trying to scam the system, essentially, not saying that you are, but...
No, understood.
To, there is no potential for that, really, in my opinion, because the verification is done at the federal level.
Yes.
Self-reporting.
Before they get the money.
Correct.
Right? Yes. Yeah.
Correct.
Is that another way of saying it? The self-reporting mechanism has been erased? It's gone?
Essentially, yeah. Well, I guess some states still have that, but... Mm. Not all states have been rolled out yet, but
sure.
The important ones, North and South Dakota. So.
Yes.
It's being rolled out in waves.
The smart ones.
Yes.
Okay.
So we wanted to just go through the actual process that a North Dakota customer would actually go through when they are applying with the verifier. There is a website that, if they have access to internet, that the customer can go out and create a profile and password, and they would be able to submit their information that way. They can also complete a paper application that is still available, and they would mail that directly to USAC themselves, along with proof documentation. They could also, we still maintain on our own website where customers can download the application. They can still contact our customer service center and request an application, and we can either mail it or email it out to them. Or they can always visit one of our customer experience centers and either receive an application, or if they don't have access to internet or don't have a computer that's readily available, they actually can use one of ours in our customer experience centers. Once USAC has determined that the customer is eligible, they actually receive an application ID. And at that point, they can go out and shop anybody, any provider that is an ETC provider. They can go out and receive benefits either on phone or on broadband. So when a customer comes to us with an application ID, we actually verify it in NLAD, that database. However, we're not able to add that benefit if we're not able to verify eligibility. And what we mean by that is we have been having some struggles with how that customer has been put into the national database. It could be a street directional is different than what the customer gave to us. Rather than spelling out Avenue, they have AVE, or they may have provided a middle initial to USAC, but they're not providing that to us. And it is a real struggle, and we have to make sure that it is absolutely exactly as if it was put into the database, and we do have some troubles with that. And we'll talk about that a little bit later as well. It would be nice to be able to search by the application ID that the customer has received from USAC, but that's not available today. And if that happens, we have to pick up the phone, we have to call USAC and kind of walk through it and say, okay, how do you have it in the database? How do we look it up in NLAD to make sure that we get this benefit for the customer? So once the benefit is received, the customer will start seeing it on their bill if they are an existing customer, or we actually set up installation on an appointment and get their services going.
What do customers typically see for a credit? Is it a the same regardless of the recipient, or does it vary?
No, they would see the, it doesn't matter if it's on broadband or phone. However, it is decreasing for phone. In January?
On December 1st.
Or December 1st?
Actually, it's going to go from $9.25 for the benefit to $7.25 for the phone, but it'll continue to be the $9.25 for the broadband.
Right.
Or can you give me the number on broadband? $9.25?
$9.25, yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And that is for standard service. For tribal, it's higher.
You know, we don't
have do any tribal yet.
Tribal, yeah. But I believe, yes, it's in an additional, yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So does that just come off the price that you charge them, or do you provide it for that service for that price?
That would be a discounted price. So the $9.25 would be off of the service that they receive.
So right. What is the service cost? The basic service.
That's a good question.
Phone
is approximately $30. I don't know exactly. Internet for the broadband, the Lifeline broadband level of service is $14.95. Mm-hmm. And then they would have an additional service code added to the account that would give them the $9.25 credit.
So it's $5.
The broadband level of service for Lifeline is a little bit slower, so it's not like our max speed for that amount. Mm-hmm. But the discount does bring it down to $5.70 a month.
Yep.
That's a pretty good discount.
So the broadband for $14, is that a discounted price too, or is that?
That's like our base price.
Well, right. The only way that they can get that price is if they qualify for the Lifeline benefit.
Okay. I was going to say, I've never seen broadband.
No. No. No.
Yeah. No. They must qualify. I'll
see the full 15.
I promise. Pick me.
No. I'm
sorry.
It goes up exponentially if you have children, Victor.
You have children who want to use this. Never mind. You're right.
So this is the actual website, the USAC website, that customers will see.
What does USAC stand for?
Mm-hmm.
Is that a federal agency?
It is. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep, it was formed by the FCC themselves.
Okay.
Yep. So this is like the top portion of their website that customers will go in and log in. And at the bottom, we've just provided some additional resources for any North Dakota consumer. So the URL for the National Verifier Portal. And then there is actual USAC training out there for the customer themselves. So there are videos out there on how to use the portal, what supporting documentation that you would need, and give some examples. So it's some pretty short little videos that are out there that are really, really beneficial. All right, and then we wanted to talk a little bit about what we do at MIDCO for kind of checks and balances. So we have a number of internal monthly audits that we actually do to make sure that everybody that is on the program is eligible and that our records are accurate. So we receive a report from NLAD from the database that gives us some subscriber information. And we actually use that to butt that up against any customer in our billing system that has Lifeline on their account. We do that a couple times a month, actually, to make sure that everything is correct. And if then there are discrepancies, we actually send a notification out to the customer saying we have found a discrepancy that, we don't believe that you should be receiving the benefit. And then we send out that notification when appropriate. And there are always, allowed to send that documentation in or reapply again. And then there are the USAC recertifications that we talked about in that timeline, where USAC actually does our annual recertifications for us. And that is based on the customer enrollment date or at the National Verifier re-verification process. If the customer fails to successfully recertify with USAC, USAC contacts us, and we are required to remove that Lifeline benefit from the customer's account within 5 business days. As well, if a customer has decided to leave Midco and go to a different provider, we have to follow those same guidelines, and USAC notifies us, and again, we have to remove that benefit within 5 days. And then there are a bunch of on-demand reports that we have access to that basically just keeps, you know, checks and balances. There's duplicate subscriber reports that we can pull, and then just re-verification status or de-enroll status are a couple of them. So some of the obstacles that we are having right now with the National Verifier, a lot of it, as I mentioned before, is just confirming that eligibility within the database. Because there are some, you know, discrepancies, like I said, with directional or name mismatch, it just adds a little bit of time to applying that benefit to the customer's application or to the customer's account, because we've got to call USAC, we've got to make sure that everything is in the database correctly. So there could be some delay in when the customer receives that benefit.
Does the the USAC form that the customer completes when they go in, does it recognize when someone does, like, puts in AVE or versus Avenue or Avenue versus AVE, that here's how it would be recognized, I'm assuming, by the Postal Service? That's what they're going off of?
I believe so, yes.
Why wouldn't they just have a system in place to correct those types of things? I kind of get the middle initial, because what if there's a junior or a senior,
right,
same name but maybe a different middle?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean,
that's a very valid question. Mm-hmm. And we haven't received any answers from USAC,
right,
on some of that.
Because you are correct. They do bounce that address information off of what the Postal Service has. So mm-hmm. why a customer would be able to put in an AV instead of an AVE, mm-hmm. I'm not sure. But they do validate that against mm-hmm. postal records.
Mm-hmm. It just seems like there could mm-hmm. be a better system in place that would
yeah.
save time on both ends.
And you would think it would be a fairly mm-hmm. simple fix. So.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's available through the post office to,
right.
to run and do the address
exactly.
correct.
Yeah.
Corrections.
Yeah. Right.
I know that for a fact.
So. We actually have notified USAC that we really do recommend that we have the capability of searching by application ID, but we've received back that they're working on it, basically. So it would just make the whole process a lot easier, not just for us, but it would make a quicker turnaround for the customer. And that really is our goal, is to make sure that they get that as soon as possible. Another struggle that we have had is just the knowledge when at USAC. So it's more so their customer support line when we call there. We've gotten some conflicting information. You can call and talk to one person and have the same question and call back 2 days later and get a completely different answer. So it's a little frustrating, and I think there is some training that probably needs to occur, but you know, we do our best to make sure that we get the right answer.
Where's the call center?
In Kentucky?
Yeah,
I believe. That's where all of the mailing notifications go to, is London, Kentucky. Yeah. And it's a new program, and they're, you know, constantly bringing new states into it. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that they're hiring and, you know, ramping up the call center in order to meet demands of those phone calls. Yeah. So hopefully as we, you know, time passes, it gets a little
better. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then just some normal challenges, customers, just not quite, you know, some will be confused on what they have to provide, or forget the application ID or that type of thing. I did share with Victor, when Lifeline, I think this has been about a year, I think, that we mm-hmm. created these. These are little wallet takeaways that, and I can give one to each of you, that we actually created. And this is actually going to change now that National Verifier it has rolled out. But we wanted to provide something for the customer to take away. And it was for some of our CXCs. And actually, some of this did come out of some interactions that we had, I believe, with the housing department here in North Dakota, where we were talking to an individual. And it was just, how do we get this information in front of them that they can have access to this? So we created a little wallet that customers can take away. And like I said, this actually will be changed, and we'll have National Verifier information in here. So we'll have like the customer portal URL. We'll have a section where they can write down their user ID and their password and then their application ID. So that way, if they come to us or they come into our CXC, or, you know, honestly, even if they decide to go with a different provider, they would have a single place that they can actually have all of that information for them. And this has gone over pretty well. So these will go out as well, and hopefully kind of help a little bit. So
do you guys have an application in front of us, or what are we
acting on? Nope, we do have one.
I've got paper.
Because it looks to me like ours go back to 2016 and 2017.
Yes. So their application is to remove the filing, the annual filing requirement.
Okay. So, do we have a copy? When did that come, like that specific request?
We received it on September 6th. Uh-huh. Here's the filing. It's
okay.
Reasonably short and sweet if you want to take a peek at
it. All right. I'm sorry. I don't have that in my materials.
I don't either.
So here's just a thing to contemplate on that. So we have been, ever since we created this, and as far as I'm concerned, became the lead state in the whole nation trying to prevent waste, fraud, and abuse. Mm-hmm. We've been requiring all the new Lifeline-only providers to do this. Mm-hmm. So MIDCO has requested, because of these changes at USAC, to no longer have to submit that. I think we have another one that may have arrived that is requesting the same thing, and we have a new Lifeline provider that has an application in. And so if I would imagine if we're going to eliminate this requirement, then we probably wouldn't impose it on that new one. So this is probably precedential with respect to more than just MIDCO. It doesn't have to be, but I just want to point that out.
Right. So you don't want to have to provide the customer list annually?
So the problem that actually any ETC in North Dakota is going to have is the fact that we don't have access to that supporting documentation or that application anymore. That is all sitting with USAC. So we don't even have access to that. Mm-hmm. The only thing that we would have access to is that they verified, you know, that they qualified through USAC, and here's their application ID. And that's all that we would be able to provide you, where in the past, we actually had to provide the customer name, the program that they actually qualified under, and then that release that the state required, and the Social Security number. Yeah, so that we don't even have access to that anymore.
You don't get the Social Security number on your applications, but you would have their name and address.
We have their name and address. Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
What are we going to do with it?
So
it really would do us no good without Social Security.
Right. So in the past, annually, we would get reports from Lifeline-only customers or Lifeline-only providers. And I got these lists. I received three of them per year. Mm. Prettied up in a spreadsheet format, and I sent it to Human Services and asked them to tell us which customers are not eligible. Once I started doing this process, I found out that they really weren't doing a great deal with it. They were only telling us if a customer had qualified in the past but no longer does, if they should be removed. Otherwise, they weren't telling us anything. If a customer was never eligible, they didn't tell us anything.
Okay.
So
2 points that I drew out of that. One, we won't even really have a mechanism without the proper data to double check anyway, and it would amount to nothing more than one government entity auditing another government entity?
Actually, even further than that. So the audit, the limited review they were doing for us in the past, even if BIDCO was able to provide us all of that information that they don't actually have, the Department of Human Services has gone to a new system as of recently that is not even capable of doing what they were doing in the past for us.
Well, this seems cut and dry. Like, it's already being done. The federal government is doing a pretty extensive eligibility, and they have the system all set up. So why would we require companies to provide information to us? It's just redundant regulatory stuff.
That would be my view as well.
Although I will say this, your explanation of the frustrations, I thought the system was working better. The USAC system was working better than what we just heard, so that's kind of discouraging. But I don't know that ours is capable of doing any better anymore.
Right,
so.
Right.
Furthermore, it's irritating to me that federal government agencies put this burden on us to begin with. They come up with this free program, and then, states, you guys go verify and make sure everybody's doing it appropriately. No money, no nothing. That's just dumb.
I don't know. I don't think they really suggested that we do anything. In fact, I think there was a time when a lot of them there didn't want anything done. They wanted it to be.
But we still had to verify the program. We had to
We didn't have to. We self-imposed it on ourselves to help prevent fraud.
Right, but we had to give people permission to be Lifeline providers.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's true. That's absolutely true.
So, I mean, yeah.
Okay. I've got it.
I will say I do think the National Verifier is doing positive for fraud. So I ran some reports on an annual basis.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at 2016. North Dakota companies received $166,000 in the month of September of 2016. It's now
$85,000
as of 2019. And you can absolutely see it in the company. Individual company numbers, where it was going on.
Are there certain areas that are where it's more concentrated?
Certain companies, yeah. And there are.
It was being tactful. I couldn't.
So, yes. it, in my opinion, it primarily wasn't companies that we were regulating. Certainly wasn't MIDCO, in my opinion.
Right. Right.
But I think it is a positive step for the prevention of fraud. So.
Yeah. Okay.
Good. I don't have any more questions.
I do not either.
Okay. From staff or anything would like to add?
No.
I will say this, though, in visiting with staff over these several years, MIDCO was always very good about reporting on these, and so I just would salute you. Not everybody was as helpful necessarily on it as you guys were.
We appreciate that.
I would second that. I have had a great deal of discussions with these folks explaining to me how the USAC system works and how it used to work versus now, so they've been very helpful.
Good.
It also might be noted, and I should have verified, maybe I shouldn't use the word verify, we've used it so much today, but as my memory serves, there are positions on the USAC board that NARUC gets to appoint, and they go unfilled, and I would love to serve on it, but there's no reimbursement. It would come out of our budget, and I've never felt I could justify that. Mm-hmm. But if someone else feels differently, I think they are needing utility regulators for the USAC board, but it's out of our cost.
Okay. All right. The two handouts, I believe there were two, as well as the audio recording of this proceeding is now considered evidence. Are there any objections to this becoming a part of the official record?
No. No objection from staff.
Company?
No.
Okay. Okay, and I don't believe there's anything else that anyone would like to add at this point. The evidence as presented is now a part of the official record upon which a decision will be made. And once again, are there any other matters for the record? Okay, seeing none, this informal hearing is now closed. Thank you very much.
Thank you.